Joe Dalton, University of Idaho. And I ran into Joe yesterday down the trade show wearing his Hokie hat. Maybe he'll explain what a Hokie is, but certainly a strong fraternity once those people that go through Virginia Tech, and that's where Joe received his PhD, it stays with him a long time. Dr. Dalton, his educational programs at the University of Idaho emphasize the enhancement of reproductive efficiency and milk quality on Idaho dairy farms. Dr. Dalton's research specialty includes male and female reproductive physiology and focuses on factors important to increasing the success of artificial insemination in cattle. So we'll look forward to his comments.
Okay, can everyone hear in the back? Okay, very good. Well, let's make sure I know how to drive this thing. There we go. Okay, Brian's reference very quickly to being a Hokie is a good one. I feel very fortunate that I was able to work with Dr. Sackey, who's listed on this presentation, while I was at Virginia Tech. And it is something, once you go to Virginia Tech, that it does stay with you forever. And in many ways, we've become fanatics, especially in the case of my living in or outside of Boise, Idaho. I'm constantly reminded that Boise State was one of two teams this year to have a 14-0 record, undefeated. And Boise State will be playing Virginia Tech next year, so I can only hope and pray that the Hokies come through. So moving on, we are going to talk about insemination-related factors affecting fertilization in estrus-synchronized cattle. And we've talked a lot these last day and a half about synchronization programs. And one of the things that we need to remember is that the success of the program depends on protocol compliance. And all these things shown here, accurate cow identification, appropriate drug dosages and route of administration, and correct time and day of treatment. Other factors, though, that we're going to talk about today, important to the success of a sync program, include semen handling, semen quality, and number of sperm deposited. Semen quality also can be broken into compensable traits and uncompensable traits, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Fertilization status and embryo quality, and then the bull effect and time of AI. The first thing I want to make sure everyone takes home: every successful AI program begins with proper semen handling. This is often the forgotten link in reproduction, something that we take for granted, and we shouldn't. Okay, there are four things we need to remember about proper semen handling, and they're shown here: time, temperature, hygiene, and skill. Okay, first question for the audience, and I like to have audience participation, so you need to wake up out there and give me an answer. We're going to synchronize a whole bunch of animals. And it was shown yesterday very well by numerous speakers that we need to adhere to the timing. We need to give injections at a certain time, and then if we're going to breed 100 cows, we need to have enough people and enough equipment in place to do that. But how do we do that? So my question to the audience is right now, how many straws should you thaw at one time? Someone raise their hand or stand up and scream out. One straw? One straw. How many of you believe that you would not be able to breed those 100 synchronized animals or more in a reasonable time frame if you thawed one at a time? Go ahead. Don't be bashful. Raise your hands. Okay. Very good. We have this constant discussion with dairy producers. Whoa.
Hold on a second. Cancel.
Nope. Okay. We have this constant discussion all the time. So we went out and summarized some data. This is data from Mel DeJarnett from Select Sires, who looked at a variety of studies, looking at the sequential insemination number, 1 through 4. So this is the first cow bred from a group of four straws that were thawed simultaneously. This would be the second, the third, and fourth. And as you can see, the conception rates are low, but then these are dairy animals. There is no difference
between sequential insemination number 1, 2, 3, or 4, and you can see the numbers of animals bred here. So the point is that you can thaw more than one straw effectively and not see a decrease in fertility. It is possible. But we go back to the question of how many straws should I thaw at one time? That's what you have to ask yourself. And the recommendations are thaw no more than you can deposit in cows within 10 to 15 minutes. If you've got 100 animals synchronized or more animals synchronized, they need to be bred, you need to have a system in place where you have enough technicians and enough people thawing, loading guns, loading animals, letting animals go, so this can be facilitated. Okay? You need to know your comfort zone. Do not thaw more than you can handle. And on a personal note, I don't know that I would be able to carry 8 or 10 AI guns and brood cows. Okay? It's not the way I operate. Okay? An important thing that we need to pay attention to, do not allow straws to touch when thawing. Okay, we can thaw straws, multiple straws simultaneously, but if they are allowed to touch, it has been shown in the literature that we cause damage to sperm because the straws will actually freeze again and then re-thaw. So, you want to take home today, semen handling is incredibly important, and we need to pay attention to time, to temperature, hygiene, and skill. Okay? Temperature, obviously, is the temperature of the thaw bath. I don't have a slide for that, but also maintaining the temperature from where the straws are prepared into the gun to the animal. Relative to inseminator skill, deposition of semen, we talked earlier, Dr. Perry showed a slide about deposition of semen into the uterine body. That's also shown here. And Dr. Perry also showed this slide. This is incredibly important to remember. There's a 10% decrease in fertility when we deposit semen in the cervix. Okay? Now, most of us who breed cows would say, well, gee, I always know I'm past the cervix. Well, there's data that shows 20% of attempted uterine body depositions by not only herdsmen inseminators or herd owners, but by professional technicians in this sample set done at Penn State shows that 20% were actually in the cervix. Okay? Something to think about. Okay. We're putting in millions of sperm in an AI dose. And just like the bull who would put in billions of sperm, we also ask, what did you do with all those sperm? First thing we have to recognize is that we have sperm transport. Sperm transport takes time. We also have to recognize it's not the first sperm that gets there that wins. Okay? There's a rapid phase to sperm transport, and this occurs in minutes. However, in the oviduct, those sperm that are there first are primarily dead. They're essentially moved through the tract by the female, and they're dead. What we're interested in is the sustained phase of sperm transport from the site of insemination, and this occurs over hours, approximately 6 to 12 hours in cattle. And we know from research that in the oviduct, there's an increase in percentage motility, which is a good thing, and percentage morphologically normal sperm. Now, how many sperm are actually there is a good question to ask, because we put millions in, the bull will put billions in. In some research that was done a while ago, the insemination numbers of sperm inseminated in this study were 50 million to 5 billion sperm. And then they went ahead and they looked in the oviductal isthmus. How many sperm were there? Well, it varied between 4,000 to 21,000 sperm were actually there. And then at the site of fertilization in the ampullary isthmus junction and the ampulla of the oviduct, you can see the different species. We put in millions to billions in this research, and near ovulation, there's very few sperm actually there that can be counted. So the question that we have to ask, is this a natural mechanism to deter polyspermy? Polyspermy is lethal. It could be. That's what we think. One of the things that we did while I was at Virginia Tech, we focused on accessory sperm and conducting research about accessory sperm. And these are sperm that are able to traverse the barriers of the reproductive tract and partially penetrate the zona pellucida. These are sperm that are competing to be the fertilizing sperm, but they're just a little bit slow. The fertilizing sperm will initiate the zona reaction, which will cause these sperm literally to be frozen in their tracks in the zona pellucida. And what we did is we would breed a lot of cows using a variety of different treatments, and then we would recover embryos 6 days later. We would classify them as shown here: unfertilized, poor, excellent, good, or fair. And you have to remember, these are embryos are terminal. We did not then go into recipients. We were looking to increase fertilization rate. We're also looking to increase embryo quality by seeing if we could increase the number of sperm competing at the site of fertilization. Dr. Sacki years ago summarized this data. At the time we had, there's over 1,000, I believe, or about 900 embryos that we had here. You can see the fertilization status and embryo quality shown here. You can see the mean number of accessory sperm and the median number of accessory sperm. Overall, this is the relationship of accessory sperm per embryo or ovum to fertilization status and embryo quality. The take-home message from here is that excellent and good embryos have a higher number of accessory sperm. So that was the holy grail when we were doing this research, was what can we do with the inseminant to try and increase accessory sperm number and therefore increase embryo quality and therefore increase pregnancy. We're going to look at a partial summary of efforts to increase accessory sperm today. We're going to look at some things that we saw a positive effect on. First off, we saw a positive effect with specific bull, with sperm dosage, and also with time of AI. Okay, the question is there a bull effect on accessory sperm number? And from this study that was done, there was a bull effect. We have four bulls shown here. The median accessory sperm number was highest and very high for this bull, bull A, shown here. The mean was also very high. So there was this distinct bull effect. This bull is different than certainly B and C and bull D. Now, it's not really surprising that there would be a bull effect because we know there's variation in fertility among bulls. This graph shows the relationship of semen quality and quantity to fertility. We have fertility increasing on this axis. We have increasing numbers of viable sperm on this axis. There is an optimal fertility of this female population. And as we increase numbers of sperm in an inseminant, bulls will approach and possibly meet this optimal fertility of the female population, shown here, whereas other bulls will not come close to the fertility of the female population. So these bulls here are problem bulls, and these bulls here are bulls that are out and commercially available. It goes to show that increasing numbers of viable sperm is not necessarily the answer. Okay, so break it down a little bit more and talk about semen quality. Over the years, we've determined there are compensable seminal traits. Compensable traits preclude fertilization. Okay? These traits are usually viability or morphology traits impairing sperm transport and ovum penetration. So these sperm don't get there. They don't get to the site of fertilization. Okay? These could be severely misshapen sperm in an otherwise normal semen sample. The good thing about compensable seminal traits, reduced fertility may be overcome or minimized by increasing sperm numbers. That's a good thing. And it's relatively easy to fix if we can define a compensable trait in an ejaculate or having a male that has compensable traits. Here we go to uncompensable traits. Uncompensable seminal traits signify incompetence of the fertilizing sperm. But the bad thing about this is these sperm cells get to the site of fertilization. They compete for fertilization. Many of them fertilize, but they don't complete fertilization and maintenance of the embryo. They exclude other sperm after fertilization, but they are actually not able to complete fertilization process or maintenance of the embryo. And recent data will show in a minute is that uncompensable seminal traits include those sperm that look normal under the microscope but have damaged DNA. Again, Dr. Perry talked a little bit about that, that we can look under the microscope and not see a difference, but there could be a difference there. Unfortunately, with uncompensable seminal traits, there's reduced fertility regardless of sperm dosage. Reduced fertility regardless of sperm dosage. So going back to our original graph, what we see here is these bulls, most likely, normal fertility, as shown here. These bulls have uncompensable traits. It doesn't matter how many sperm cells we put in. Those bulls will never be fertile enough to meet the fertility of the female population. This should, right here, raise a red flag. If you ever see an advertisement that says, our sperm is packaged at double strength, you should question the validity of that statement. Right there. Because you know, because you've been here and you've been paying attention, increasing numbers of viable sperm in all bulls does not result in increased fertility. Does not. Because many bulls have uncompensable traits. In bulls that have compensable seminal traits, well, sure, if you increase the numbers, and we showed that. Okay, one of the studies that we looked at was sperm dosage on accessory sperm and fertilization rate. Okay? We had a study where we compared 20 times 10 to the 6 sperm cells per half mil dose versus 40 times 10 to the 6. Within the normal range of commercial AI, shown here, 40 is a little bit high, but it's high normal, we did not see a difference in accessory sperm, median number, and there's no difference in fertilization rate. There's a numerical difference, but there's no practical or statistical difference. So then we went on and we compared 20 times 10 to the 6th, which is the standard AI dose, to 100 times 10 to the 6th. We thought we're going to blow the socks off the system, and we did. Accessory sperm number went quite high. 27 was the median, and fertilization rate was 97% of those embryos were recovered. Now, numerous speakers yesterday talked about having realistic expectations with what you do. When you go this high with sperm numbers, this is impractical in a normal processing situation. You reach the limits of the ability of the system to freeze and or the sperm cells to go through freezing and thawing successfully, because you're limiting the amount of extender and you're putting more cells in there. This is practically impossible to do in a processing situation. Research-wise, with the group of bulls that we had, we could do it, but it's practically impossible to do in a commercial setting. So this is not going to happen. On the other hand, we wrote a grant during this time that we thought, are people going to think we're nuts? Because we wanted to breed cows, natural service. to see what nature had intended. Fortunately, we got the grant funded, we did the research, we used bulls to breed cows in the system. We would recover the embryos 6 days later. Look what happened. Accessory sperm, incredibly high. Fertilization rate, incredibly high. Okay? And I think that's another thing that I'd like you to take home from this, is that not only the time, temperature, hygiene and skill from semen handling, but that fertilization rate many times is very high. Many times is very high. Even with an AI dose of 20 and 40 million, it is very high, and even higher than that shown here. Okay, so we talked about that. We talked about the bull, and we're going to move on. Okay, we also looked at embryo quality on fertilization status and embryo quality, looking at sperm dosage. This is the data, high dose versus low dose, and this is 20. Excuse me, low dose was 20, high dose was, this one was 100, and you can see here we did shift embryo quality. But this is a laboratory type situation. It's not practical for in a commercial situation. We also looked at semen quality. We looked at average semen and below average semen. This is semen that was sent to us by a national AI center who had evaluated these bulls, and these are their this is their terminology for average versus below average semen in their bulls, and this is based on percentage abnormal sperm. We went ahead and used this semen and bred cows, flushed the embryos out, looked at fertilization status and embryo quality, and you can see as semen quality was higher, we got better embryos. Okay, not terribly surprising. Here's the one thing that's very disturbing. Some recent research done at Virginia Tech showed that normal-shaped sperm, okay, normal under the microscope, in an abnormal ejaculate, they exhibit vulnerability to DNA denaturation. Okay. And the scary thing is that denatured DNA does not always appear in abnormal-shaped sperm. And that's shown here. We're looking at a normal-shaped sperm cell right here, and it actually shows, it fluoresces red. It's showing that it is abnormal. Okay? This system was put together by putting a scrotal insulation on a bull. We literally put a little down jacket on a bull's scrotum, on the testicles. We used adhesive and duct tape to effectively negate the ability of the bull to thermoregulate. By doing so for 48 hours, just 48 hours, then removing the scrotal insulation, we essentially had a point source of heat stress for that particular bull. And then we collected bulls every 3 days after that, two ejaculates, and this semen sample was 27 days. 27 days this semen sample was after the insult. And the scary thing is there's normal-looking cells that with a microscope you would look at, they would look at here, we'd say, okay, that's a normal cell. They are actually affected. They actually have DNA problems. So, morphology is incredibly important. It is probably the best tool that we have available, whether you're a veterinarian and you're doing breeding soundness evaluations, or you're a national AI center. Incredibly important. But it is the old story of, are we only seeing the tip of the iceberg? And we know there's a whole lot more going on down here. We just have to find a way to develop techniques to see what is below the surface. Okay, another study that we looked at was in an effort to increase accessory sperm and hopefully embryo quality, fertilization rate, was time of AI. And this is not timed AI, it's time of AI relative to onset of estrus. So we used HeatWatch, and we checked the computer every 3 hours, and we had treatments set up. Some animals were going to be bred at 0 hour, as close to onset of estrus as possible. Some animals we've been projected in 12 hours. If they came into heat at 3:33 a.m., we had them up at 3:33 p.m., and we inseminated them. The same thing for the 24-hour animals. If they came into heat at 3:33 a.m., we were there the next morning. Okay? And as we can see here, as we got closer to ovulation from 0, 12 to 24 hours, as we got closer to ovulation, we increased the median sperm number, accessory sperm number, and we increased fertilization rate. Okay, these were in Holstein cows, and each animal was had heat watch, and it was a half mil dose of 25 times 10 to 6 sperm cells. The interesting thing about this was we also saw a bull difference, or bull effect. At 0 hour, accessory sperm were low in all bulls. They increased in bull A at 12, they increased more at 24, and then these we also had a natural service treatment, which was a 0 hour natural service treatment, because that is essentially what would happen. The bull would identify a cow in estrus. The cow is not going to say, "I'll come back in five hours," nor is the bull going to say, "I'm going to come back in 5 hours." So this is also a 0 hour treatment. Now you can see accessory sperm is huge. There's a huge number of sperm that are there at the site of fertilization following natural service for this particular bull. Bull B showed a similar pattern. Bull B is not a subfertile bull. Bull C is a fertile bull. We have no problems with them, but this just shows you that even within fertile bulls, you see quite the difference in their ability to get sperm to the site of fertilization relative to time of insemination. So, looking at fertilization rate, embryo quality, and time of AI, we have fertilization rate shown here. We have 0 hour insemination, 12 hour, and 24 hour insemination. Fertilization rate went up. We talked about that already from the table. If we look at excellent and good embryos, it goes down. The percentage of excellent and good embryos actually are greatest at 0 hour, early, breeding right after that cow comes in estrus. Okay? And it was intermediate for the 12 hour and then the 24. Fair and poor, we didn't see a whole lot of fair and poor at 0 hour. And then 12, there was a little hump, and 24 was similar to zero. Degenerate embryos are embryos that are determined to not be progressing properly. And at 0 hour, we see very little. At 12 hour, we see very little. But at 24, we see quite the spike in degenerate embryos. So what does all this mean? Let's put this together. What does all this mean? George showed this graph essentially earlier in his talk. And one of the things I've got to describe here is the line shown here, this red line shown here is an actual line from research we did at Virginia Tech with HeatWatch, where we told producers, 17 different dairies, you pick a time of day, 3 hour time of day when you want to breed cows. Okay? And they picked it. And we ended up having cows bred all around the clock relative to the initiation of estrus. So we can go ahead and superimpose this curve on here from previous data, and we can superimpose the research that we did looking at embryo quality relative to 0, 12, and 24-hour treatments. And we can begin to piece together why we might see our highest conception where it says AI a compromise. And what we think is going on here is that on the extreme left, where we have a low fertilization rate and high embryo quality, we might have inadequate sperm life here. Only the strong survive, because they have to survive. If they go in at 0 hours, they have to survive in dairy animals at least 28 hours to ovulation, and in many beef animals, 30 plus. Okay? On the other hand, the other extreme on the right side of the graph, we have a high fertilization rate. But we get low embryo quality. There were a lot of degenerate embryos that we recovered there. Why might that be happening? Well, we suspect that's happening because we have less sperm selection. We do have sperm selection over time because we have sperm that have to go through sustained transport and capacitation, but we have less sperm selection. And the other piece of the equation is when you inseminate close to ovulation, the egg ovulates, and now it's waiting and waiting and waiting. And essentially what's happening is the egg is dying. The egg's not just resting and saying, okay, well, I can wait 6 or 8 hours. No, essentially that ovum is aging. Okay? So that is where we come back to this AI or a compromise is in the center between about 4 and 16 hours after first standing estrus is where we see the peak in this graph for conception rates. Okay, there was a good question yesterday from a gentleman who I hope is here today about timed AI and about differences in bulls within a timed AI system. This is a slide that was developed by Ray Niebel, who's currently at Select Sires. And it shows on this axis here, number of live sperm and hours of sperm longevity, shown on this axis here. And this is for a cosync system. This is a theory. This is not fact. And there are no bulls here that we could tell you which bull was blue or red. Okay? This is just a theory based on what we know, trying to piece together the system. Okay. If we have a cosync situation where we are giving GnRH and administering artificial insemination at the same time, okay, GnRH will cause ovulation to occur in cattle approximately 28 to 30 hours later. It's very similar to the natural event of it being tied to the first mount of estrus. It's very similar. And that's shown here by this gray area. So that's the interval from AI to ovulation using cosync. It's, let's say, about 28 to 30 hours. So right now you should be thinking, okay, I'm putting sperm in approximately 28 hours before ovulation. It just makes sense that either within bull or across bulls, there are going to be some differences. Yes, there will be. Because there are bulls that have, if we look here, this is some threshold number of sperm for optimal fertility. There are bulls that will have the number of live sperm that will maintain above that line for a long period of time, as shown in that first bull, which is looks to me kind of turquoise. However, as you move and look at the different bulls, this bull drops here, the old yellow bull drops quicker, and the hours of sperm longevity are approximately 24 hours. But he drops below this threshold line of sperm for optimum fertility at about 18 hours. And you can see the decay, if you want to, of each line and each bull. Okay? So, there are differences among bulls. Do we know, either as researchers or as AI organizations, whether bull A, bull B, bull C, bull D will fit into a cedar cosync that is bred at 60-some-odd hours? No, we don't know that.
Joe, can you use the big pointer up there
to
show up better?
Sure. There we go. So just to make sure that you understand that every bull is going to vary in the longevity pattern that he has. And the goal is to be above the line and in this gray area because that's where ovulation is. Now these bulls here, does this mean that bull, the red bull, the yellow bull, and this purple bull are not fertile bulls? No, not at all. Not at all. they may not be the optimal bulls for this system. We have learned in a lot of dairy systems that the co-sync that we work with dairy, we have not had very good success with. However, we have very good success when we give GnRH and then we wait 16 hours before we inseminate. And effectively, what does that do? You would put AI here, you would slide ovulation this way. Effectively, that's what it does. That covers more of the theoretical bull population shown in this slide. So again, it's very important to recognize these are not subfertile or infertile bulls. These are bulls that may not fit the system, and unfortunately we're not able to sample them to describe that. Okay? So I hope that answers the question that was posed yesterday. It's an excellent question. I get it all the time about which bulls should I use. So, take home. Sperm longevity may be a factor in fertility differences. It's entirely possible. Okay, let's summarize. Every successful AI program begins with proper semen handling, time, temperature, hygiene, and skill. Okay? Compensable traits of semen relate to the ability of inseminated sperm to initiate fertilization. Okay? They don't get there, essentially. Reduced fertility in this case may be overcome or minimized by increasing sperm numbers. Bull studs will recognize this situation, and you will see bulls packaged at different doses. 20 million, 25 million, 30 million. Okay? Entirely a normal process. Uncompensable traits are the huge problem that we have. Okay? Because they get to the site of fertilization, they fertilize, they exclude any other competition, but they can't maintain the embryo. Okay? You get reduced fertility regardless of sperm dosage. This is where you remember, be skeptical when you see double-strength semen. Dosage is not everything. Bulls with unacceptable levels of abnormal sperm are the main source. And this is across the board. This isn't just one abnormal. This is a group of abnormals. And the scary thing is the damage to chromatin, DNA, extends beyond abnormal sperm to apparently normal sperm. So there's stuff going on underneath what we can see. Okay, what can you do? And you should focus on reducing the risk of uncompensable seminal traits. That's what you should do. Another thing to take home. Use semen from AI studs where morphology is a routine part of the evaluation. That's important. It's the best thing we have. And morphology should be a part. Whether it's a custom collection facility or national facility, morphology is important. Use multiple proven high fertility bulls. Multiple. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Multiple proven high fertility bulls. Okay? And for those of you that breed with bulls, screen all natural service bulls with a complete BSE, including sperm morphology. Okay? Incredibly important. Another piece of information you want to take home, time of AI should occur close enough to ovulation to maximize sperm access. Okay, we want to get sperm there, but not too late that the egg's waiting. And it's a balancing act. And that's why the amount of research has gone on looking at insemination at 48 hours, at 50 to 56 hours, at 56 to 60, 60 to 66 in the different systems, is trying to get this to occur so that you can have the maximal number of pregnancies generated in any given system. Okay, I have to acknowledge my advisor, Dr. Sacky. All this was possible because of him while we were at Virginia Tech. And also, I have to acknowledge those that funded this research. Select Sires funded this research, National Association of Animal Breeders, Virginia Ag Council. There were numerous graduate students and other faculty. You see Bill Beal's name on here. Other faculty that were involved in this research over the years. And no matter how you say it, thank you very much for your attention. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
And unfortunately, I won't be here for question and answer, so I know I'm standing between you and lunch, but if you have a couple of questions, I'd be happy to answer them now. I've got time now. Thank you.